Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. A recent Pew Research Center survey reveals that the makeup of the typical American family is changing, and I'm sure it should come to no surprise. Now, more than 40% of adults have either a stepchild, a step or half sibling, or a step parent. So we're talking about this at every level. But they share more than just a set of statistics. They share common challenges, many of which are embraced. In a new memoir by author and Columbus Dispatch food editor Robin Davis, the name of the memoir is Recipe for Joy, A Stepmom's Story of Finding Faith, Following Love, and Feeding a Family. Robin, welcome back to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
Question to our listeners. Are you a member of a blended family or a step family? Do you think you've succeeded? Or as you were growing up, do you think your stepmother or your stepfather brought it to the table and helped make it work? Give us a call or send us an email and share the secret to your success or what you think was the secret to the success. 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. And, of course, you can go to our Facebook page and post your comment there. Robin, you are completely devoted to your career. You're very successful in San Francisco as a restaurant critic for the Chronicle. You didn't have any intention of getting married. You were of the ilk, you're married to your job. Then things changed. You wound up back in Ohio when your dad fell ill.
Right.
And you kind of reconnected to the state and also to your siblings.
Mm-hmm.
And you decided you wanted to return to the fold. It wasn't to return because you met a guy. It was, at first, just to be closer to your family.
It was. My father had gotten sick and had pancreatic cancer. So I was coming back a lot to Ohio. He lived in Dayton, where I had grown up, and I would fly into Columbus because it was cheaper. My sister lived here in Columbus, and I would spend a few days with her. And she was getting ready to have her children then. She was about 7 months pregnant towards the end of his illness. And so she kept saying, really, you need to be here when my child's born, when Joshua was born. And I kept thinking, I want to be an aunt that he knows and not one that she has to reintroduce every couple years when he saw me. So, yeah, I came back to be near my family.
Something you said you'd never do.
Right. One of many
things.
You were
you were pretty rigid.
I was very specific. I left Ohio because I didn't see a future here for me. And I followed my career, and my career was in food writing. And my gosh, there was nothing interesting in food, I thought, in Columbus or in Ohio. And maybe at the time that I left, that was true to a degree. But I didn't want to get married. I had no interest in family life. I didn't think I'd be good at parenting because I was very devoted to my career. My career in San Francisco meant I went out every single night. That's what I did. And then I wrote during the day. So there wasn't time for children and not much time for a relationship either.
Unless they like you to pick out what they're going to eat every night, as you said.
And let me eat off their plates.
When you announced it at first, you took kind of a leave of absence, mm-hmm. a sabbatical type of thing, and then you finally decided to make the big move. But people predicted that, oh, you're going to fall in love and get married. Do you think you became more open to that when you did move back to Ohio?
No, I really thought that I would probably never date when I moved to Ohio. And I always had, you know, the big joke that I had dated all three single straight men in San Francisco. And so I was probably not going to date much in Ohio either. And I really wasn't looking for that. And I met my husband only a month after I'd been here. So maybe I hadn't gotten to the point where I thought, oh, yeah, I need to think about dating. Maybe I wasn't there yet when I met him.
Now, I don't want to jump ahead. There's a lot to talk about. But before anybody thinks that, oh, this is just one of those stories about how great it was and how easy, you know, how wonderful. And, you know, that would be pretty boring and not reality. Things started to unravel, but for about 3 years you held up, you kept things going, and then what I call the imposter syndrome set in.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if that specifically, but it set in on many levels. You were talking to your sister about being overwhelmed, and she told you that maybe you needed help. And the first thing I thought, heaven help me, was that you would hire a house cleaner. But you were smarter than that. You went to a counselor. I was wondering if you could read from your book, just about, you know, where you can, where it starts to creep in.
Okay. Somewhere along the way, I decided that if I was going to do this stepmother thing, I was going to do it perfectly. Perfect is a dangerous word. It's full of expectations, most of which I've since come to believe aren't based in reality. Perfection, as I perceived it, precluded emptying oneself to become obedient to God's plan. Being perfect takes up an awful lot of space, and so it doesn't allow for the emptying thing to happen. For me, God's will became supplanted, again, with my own will to be a perfect wife and stepmother. I wanted to be a straight-A mom right out of the chute, like a student in cooking school who wants to be Julia Child the day she graduates. I allowed myself no leeway, no room for learning, or, God forbid, mistakes. I just knew that if I tried harder, worked harder, and loved harder, I would be a perfect straight-A mom. What that search for perfection actually gave me was an A-plus bout of anxiety that turned into something more serious.
There, you bring up a lot of issues there. One is faith, and it's in the subtitle to your book, A Stepmom's Story of Finding Faith, Following Love, and Feeding a Family. How did it happen? How did you survive the 3 years as it was? What were you doing with your new kids, with your new family?
Well, I was trying very hard is what I was doing. I was trying to be involved in their life and try to love them without intruding on the memory of their mother. Their mother had passed away before we were married. That's how I came to be a stepmother. And so I was trying to walk that fine line. I found myself cooking a lot because cooking really was the language that I had. No matter where you are, no matter who you're talking to, everybody eats. So I really found that as a language that we could relate on. And so that was great. But I didn't know always what to say or what to do when we were juggling schedules. And there were three of them, and there were two of us. So my husband and I were kind of outnumbered. And with any children, they change all the time. That was my kind of fatal mistake with this, is that I thought this is going to be like a job, 3 months, 4 months tops, and I've got it down. Oh, I was so wrong. Because 3 or 4 months, they're whole new people, and the situation's changed, and their friends have changed, and their challenges have changed. And it was never just the five of us. Of course, then we had all the outside family influences as well, and places we had to be and things we had to go to. So it was a lot to juggle, and it was more than I found that I could juggle all on my own.
Your experience sounds more normal than not in a way, because we all say we're going to be the perfect something, the perfect parent, and we all go through that thing of, wait a minute, and 3 months ago they were taking the bottle fine, and now 3 months later they're not. I mean, it doesn't matter what you're doing. There was change. Let's go back a little bit and talk about you and Ken. You met, you fell in love. Did you and Ken talk about the step part before you decided to marry?
We didn't talk so much about it, which is kind of funny. I had my fears. I could see where the relationship was going, and I definitely had fears about it. Like, you know, he's going to ask you to marry him, and you're going to be a stepmother, and then what are you going to do? Because I had always said, I don't want to be a mother. I'm too selfish. I'm too dedicated to my career. I don't know how to be a parent. So we didn't talk about it, not really. And so he, of course, is one of those people that's like, oh, parenting's pretty easy. You know, it's good. It's all good. And the thing is, I mean, after everything he'd been through, the parenting side wasn't hard. And I do have to say that my three stepkids are amazing kids and really never gave us, they gave us very, very little to worry about.
And you had one last thing that sometimes people think, well, you didn't have to deal with the ex-wife. And that's not really fair to you.
It's kind of not. It is a true statement. And sometimes people say, well, who do you think has it easier, a divorced stepmom or a widowed? And I just think they're both really difficult. And biological mothers, whole different difficult set of circumstances. I think they're all really hard. But what I did have was the memory of a woman was very loved. My husband never stopped loving her. The children never stopped loving her. She had died tragically at 35 of breast cancer. The kids had watched her die. So there was never conflict that you see in maybe a divorce situation. There's no resolution when the marriage ends. There's no peace from that. So what I did have to deal with was this very loving memory of a mother and never intrude on it. And sometimes being a stepmother still means you have to be the bad guy and never really wanting to do that. And I also didn't want to add to their grief or their pain or their angst. You know, I never wanted to have to say no or be the bad guy, I guess. That was always kind of the hard part. And Cinderella didn't help any of us, you know, the evil stepmother. I never wanted to be that.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest is Robin Davis. She's Columbus Dispatch food editor and author of a new book. It's a memoir. It's called Recipe for Joy, A Stepmom's Story of Finding Faith, Following Love, and Feeding a Family. I think that you kind of know where the conversation's going. If you want to join the conversation, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Coming up, we're going to be hearing from a professional clinical counselor about and talk about what Robin went through and maybe hear from you as well. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also check out the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page and post your question or comment there. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
It's 62 degrees in downtown Columbus. Thanks for joining us today for All Sides with Ann Fisher. Partly sunny skies and warming up to a high of 71 today. Clouds for tonight, a nice evening with a low of 58. Cloudy skies with a chance of a shower on Tuesday and a high back up near 70. Still that chance of rain Tuesday night, a low of 54. Support for 89.7 comes from the State Auto Insurance Companies, providing home, automobile, and business insurance products and services to Central Ohioans since 1921. State Auto is on the web at stateauto.com. And support comes from the Wexner Center for the Arts, partnering with the STAR program of the Wexner Medical Center to present an unforgettable evening with Natalie Cole, April 25th in Mershon Auditorium. This fundraiser features the Grammy Award winner's take on the Great American Songbook. Tickets and VIP packages at wexarts.org. All Sides continues. This is 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. This hour, we're talking about blended families, step families. Still with us is author Robin Davis. She's written about her own family in a memoir. It's called Recipe for Joy, A Stepmom's Story of Finding Faith, Following Love, and Feeding a Family. And joining us now in the studio as well is Lisa Davis, a professional clinical counselor with Directions Counseling Group here in Columbus. Welcome to the show, Lisa.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And for anyone out there that's wondering, no, there is no relation. Two different Davises, Lisa and Robin. If you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Robin and Ken took their time getting married. You waited about 2 years?
We did, after we met again, and it was about 3 years from the time that his first wife had died.
And so took your time getting to know the children. And even with all of that, you still had that moment 3 years after mm-hmm. the marriage of the stress that you went through and the anxiety. Is there, Lisa Davis, any advice about how long you should wait?
Oh,
what I know there's never a perfect number, but what should you be looking for?
Yeah, well, I think maturity of both the people getting married. I totally believe in counseling, not only because I'm a counselor, but because I also am in a step family situation. So I married a man with two children, and we had no clue what we were getting into. And, you know, Robin and I were sharing before the show, it was kind of like, oh, this will be fun. This will be, I like to babysit. I like kids. This will just be, it will work it out as we go. And then, you know, you find yourself in this situation, you're going, oh gosh, there's no guidebook for this other than, you know, this Christian principles that we already put into play. And thank heavens, my husband's a wonderful man. He was very patient with me. We prayed a lot. We went to church. We, you know, tried to put the kids first, but we had a lot of growing to do. I see a lot of couples now who are going into blended families who will come for that premarital counseling. I think it's just as important, if not even more so, because there are children involved.
Both of you have brought up faith. It's a big component of your book, Robin. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of people that aren't going to go there. It's not going to be part of their life. And Lisa, you brought it up in your own. Is this something that's required, or how do you describe or what the alternative might be for people who are not faith-based?
Sure. And we see a lot of people who are not faith-based. To me, when I'm working with those kinds of families, I boil it down to just basic respect. You know, you may love the person you're marrying, they may love you, but the children never asked for this, whether it was their parent dying or they never asked to have to go from one house two nights and then the next house and back and forth. You know, they just didn't ask for that. And so I try to help couples lay a foundation of, you know, do not expect these children to automatically love you. And you may not automatically love them. There's a lot of times there's controversy between a man and a woman who are getting married, going, well, the kids don't respect me yet, and blah, blah, blah. Well, you know, again, the kids didn't ask for it. And the biggest mistake I think the step-parent makes is doing too much too soon. Like Robin had said, trying to be that perfect parent. Well, you can't be. But at least demonstrate respect for the child and try to move into the child's world. The adults tend too often to try and get the kids to come along with what they want. And, well, they don't love and respect me. Well, they need time to adjust to all of this, too. So if you are a non-faith-based person, whether you are faith-based or non-faith-based, demonstrating respect for that child and asking the child to demonstrate respect back. They don't have to love you. They don't have to like you. But your family needs to have a sort of a foundation of mutual respect.
I know a couple different examples I'm going to throw you in, and I don't even know if one's better than the other, but I know people who have gone ahead and gotten married, even though they know that their new partner doesn't really like the kids that much, and vice versa. And I also know somebody who refused to marry somebody until he was able to demonstrate utterly, clearly, that he was in that family 100% and was going to be a father to her children.
Wow.
I know.
Those are kind of extremes,
really,
I think.
Two extremes. But what about the marrying somebody that, you know, doesn't really like your kids?
Oh, I think that's a terrible idea.
I mean, can you even imagine?
Terrible idea.
But people do it.
Yeah. Well, and that's where a lot of times abuse comes into play. You know, a step-parent, not all, but somebody going into a situation like that, if they don't have children of their own, they don't understand developmental stages, they don't have empathy for the child. You know, and that was my case. I didn't abuse kids, but I was very selfish and, well, why can't they do that kind of thing? You know, I think it's a terrible idea to marry somebody if you really can't stand the children. Terrible.
I agree with that. I think you've made it three years.
I
wouldn't have made it through. I wouldn't have gone through the marriage. The thing with me is that I fell in love with the children too. The children were beautiful and wonderful. While I struggled with the whole concept of motherhood, and I didn't know what to say to, you know, 10-year-olds and 8-year-olds. I always loved them. My other thing is that because they had lost their mother, I was afraid I was going to mess them up more. And I kept thinking, oh, my gosh, you know, I'm going to add to the problems. And you know, that wasn't the case. The other thing was my husband didn't marry me, you know, to take care of the kids. He is very hands-on. He is very front and center about all of that. But I can't imagine the marriage for us was always the five of us. It was never just the two of us.
And you did not, the faith didn't come into play until after you were married. You didn't join the church in this case, the Catholic Church, as a requirement?
It was never a requirement. Now, I did join the Catholic Church 2 weeks before we got married, but it wasn't so we could have a Catholic wedding or anything like that. I really had these feelings that God was calling me back to Ohio, and I don't know how to explain it other than that, but that I needed to be close to my family, and I needed to be here. And then when I met Ken, I kept having these feelings that were so opposite of everything I had said as an adult. I think you could get married. I think you could be a stepmother. So those were really the kinds of conversations I was having with God. And I chose the Catholic Church after researching a lot of other churches. I had grown up kind of sporadically Protestant, not a big faith background when I grew up. And then after my mother had died right after college, I had walked away from my faith. And I just said, you know, not really interested. Bad things still happen. God, you can't take care of me. I'll do it myself. So it was, you know, a decade or more later before I actually came back and found a faith that I could really live with and a faith that I believed in. And I found comfort in the Catholic Church.
Michael in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome, Michael.
Hi, good morning. Good morning. I've been married more than once, and on both sides, I mean, you know, with children from myself and then her. And one of the things that I have learned definitely is that you learn to pick your battles. Because what will happen is you don't want to divide it. You'll end up with a divided house over something that means relatively nothing. You'll keep insisting one way or insisting something should be this way, and then the argument turns into something much bigger, and then whatever the initial catalyst was means nothing.
This just sounds like every day.
Teenagers, right? Yeah.
But especially dealing with teenagers, you really learn to pick your battles. Is this something really, you know what, can I live with this for a year or so? That's the biggest advice, is that I've learned, just you pick your battles and really look at how that person talks to and treats their own children, because that would give you a pretty good indication if what they do, how they deal with their own, will dictate how they will deal with yours.
That's an interesting point, Michael Robin. Did you take your cue, or did it help much?
I did. My husband was amazing with his children. And I do have to say, Michael, I agree with you 100%. If somebody wins a battle, then somebody loses. And that's kind of a terrible thing when you realize that. And not everything has to be won. My husband is amazing with his kids. He's very hands-on. He treats them with respect. He is the kind of dad who, he's strict, but he can also listen to what they say and come back later and say, you know, I told you this, and I think I listened to what you said, and I think I'm wrong. I think what you said was right, and we should do it this way. And I was able to take a cue. I think as a stepmother, I kept thinking, I have to be right all the time, and I don't feel right all the time. I don't feel like I have all the answers.
I think what he said was excellent. In our experience, my experience, one of my stepchildren was oppositional defiant. So as a teenager, we had issues with running away and drugs and alcohol and all kinds of stuff. And it's really fun when you have a teenager who's court-ordered to live with you. Holy cow. Mm-hmm. And we had to learn to pick those battles and say, you know what, we can't stop you from smoking, but you're not going to smoke in the house. We can't stop you from using drugs outside of our home, but if you bring them in, we'll turn you in. And if we will drug test you, we will not let you get a driver's license if you're still using. You know, so it wasn't a daily, you know, back and forth struggle, because we had three other children to look out for. So we were in counseling ourselves to go, you know, what are we doing? And which battles do we choose, and which ones do we let go of? And I find my work with blended families, again, that's one of the challenges, is helping them to set those boundaries and pick which battles are important and which ones are not.
Thank you, Michael, for that call. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. the idea of change and the kids changing, it was about 3 years. Was there something about what was going on in their lives at that point, Robin, that was a lot of change or that you just had not prepared for? The boy was just about teenager, right?
He was. He was 12, actually, when we got married.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So there was a lot that was going on when you're transitioning, you know, from eighth grade into high school. There's just so much more that goes on with it. But I would say, really, that the struggles were mine. What it was is that, like I said, I thought it would get easier and I would get better at it, whatever that means. And it didn't. It was kind of the idea that I'm still struggling. I am 3 years into this and I continue to struggle. I still don't have the answers. And I didn't know where to find, you know, the answers, if there was a problem, how the girl should dress, how he should dress. You know, all of that.
You mentioned that you lived in a town where and that you didn't have a lot of role models.
I didn't. When I was growing up, I loved my mother very much, but my mother was an alcoholic, and so she had retreated a great degree. She was also, I think I could pretty safely say, was clinically depressed. And so she had retreated and really extremely hands off with us. And I also say that I had three older brothers, and I think that they had cut such a wide swath that if I was anywhere within that, my parents weren't getting very concerned about what I was doing. I got good grades. I had friends. They were okay with it. And where I grew up, none of my friends were married, or some of them were married, but they weren't having children. And so I didn't have a great idea of what it actually meant to be a parent and be, you know, with a child all the time.
And then you were living in Dublin.
Right.
And you mentioned a mother-daughter cookie party. How very nifty and cool of you to do that.
And it was giant fun. And I have to say, the women were beautiful and wonderful. And I felt like an alien. I thought that I want to be like that. I want to be those things. But I'm not. And they were all women who had really devoted their lives to their family. And I was still working. I continue to work. And I don't think that will ever go away for me. I would never want that to happen. So it was life choices. And my choices had been different. And where I wanted to talk, you know, maybe a little bit more about maybe some of the challenges in the Catholic Church or some of the world events, we were generally talking about, you know, all the ins and outs of schools and parenting and so forth.
Having friends, Lisa Davis, that you could talk to, important.
Yeah, support. Now,
support.
None of them were going through what we were going through, but they didn't need to. They were empathetic, and gosh, we'll be praying for you. My brother and his wife prayed for us. And I would like to say to the listeners, reach out to people. Don't try to go through this by yourself. You know, this is a time where you need some support, whether it's church or friends. And that's, again, why we were in counseling, because it was the time before shared parenting. This is the mid-80s. And we just weren't sure what to do, which direction to go. And, you know, counseling was just a godsend for us. It's one of the reasons I do what I do now. I'm a registered nurse and was a nurse at the time and left that because my husband, after a session one time, said, you know, after everything we've been through, I think you'd be good at this. And our counselor said, Lisa, you've already got a PhD in this, okay? So go get a degree to represent that. You can go do some counseling.
Reaching out and trying to find friends that you can talk to and finding that support group is one thing. But a lot of people, and it might not just be reserved for people who have an ex-spouse in the background, but also somebody who is replacing or is not replacing, but marries a widow or a widower, the old friends of the family, the people who knew them when, and that kind of thing. I'll never forget somebody once said to me, Josh, I went to their baseball game and all the other moms didn't even want to talk to me. And this was a divorce situation. I don't know. I mean, ultimately, Did you have some experiences like that, Robin, where you just felt like there was a whole other group of people you had to live up to?
Well, there was, to some degree, there certainly was. I would say the vast majority of people were very kind. But for the people who had known the children's mother, they had an image of what the mother should look like and be like. And so I did, in a way, have to live up to that as well. And we did have some occasions where people weren't necessarily interested in maintaining the friendship after we got married. They had gotten used to Ken dealing with the illness and then Ken being, you know, the widowed father. And they kind of let the friendship go and weren't very interested in the new couple of us. That was just a dynamic that they weren't very interested in maintaining. And I found that unusual and strange and certainly something I hadn't expected.
Yeah, we found, because my husband's ex-wife was still in the picture and they live 10 minutes apart, we had kind of a different situation in that our stepchildren were still very involved with their mother's family. And because they, I think, loved me or liked me at least, wanted me to be involved too. So let's go to Aunt Brenda's and, you know, for this birthday party. And so I found myself in that odd position of going, okay, I get to be around my husband's ex-wife and her family and the kids, but I would want to do it for the kids. But, you know, it was just an odd situation at times. And then running into people who knew my husband when he was married before, I think the most disturbing thing to me was their desire to gossip and go, oh, so I hear she's doing blah, blah, blah. And you just kind of bristle and, you know, sometimes get caught up in that and other times go, I don't even want to talk about that. You know, she's the mother of these children. And so demonstrating a level of respect for her in that, you know, I wanted to do that as well.
Once again, that maturity thing comes in when it comes to that. I've got a couple great Facebook messages. I'll try to get to one before we take a quick break. From Holly on Facebook, she says, my husband and I have been married for 6 years and have 3 kids, a 6-year and a 3-year-old twins. My mother-in-law passed away from cancer a month before our wedding, therefore our children never knew her. My father-in-law has since remarried, and his second wife is the only grandmother my kids have known. It is very important to me that my kids know that even though their step-grandmother loves them very much, they have a biological grandmother as well. Do you have any tips on how to introduce this concept to young children? How do we make sure we include their biological grandmother in their lives, and how do we make sure they know her even though she is deceased? That brings up all kinds of issues of grandparents and so forth.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think keeping the pictures around of biological grandma is important, and remembering her birthday or celebrating her life, but also demonstrating respect again for this other woman who's now entered into the family and demonstrating respect and welcoming to her. She will never take biological grandma's place, but she will have her own place in the family. Maybe it's a different name. They call her something other than grandma. But definitely including and demonstrating respect for both people, the memory of the one who is gone and respect for the new person who's coming in.
Robin, that's not something you brought to the relationship, but did you marry into something? In-laws and
Yes, and we did when I married in. You know, clearly my parents were already gone, so my stepkids were never going to know them. My husband lost both of his parents in the first couple years that we were married, and then we did have Grace's memory. We had Grace that was still very much present, and we needed it to remain that way. So for us, we still have pictures of Grace in the house alongside pictures of the rest of us as well. And I think that was something that's very important, and also making it okay in our situation for the kids to talk about their mother in front of me, that it was not a secret and not something to not be talked about. Anytime they wanted to bring her up, that was fine and that was good. And we worked very hard to make that the case. It's slightly different, but, you know, for us, we wanted to maintain that relationship and let them know that relationship continues even though that person is no longer physically here with us.
My guest, Robin Davis, Columbus Dispatch food editor and author of a new memoir. It's called Recipe for Joy, A Stepmom's Story of Finding Faith, Following Love, and Feeding a Family. Also with us in the studio, Lisa Davis, a professional clinical counselor with Directions Counseling Group. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Nurse Charlie Cullen worked in 8 hospitals and killed dozens of patients before being arrested in 2003. On the next Fresh Air, journalist Charles Graber, author of The Good Nurse, A True Story of Medicine, Madness, and Murder, explains how Cullen was able to evade detection for 10 years. Join us.
Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon on 89.7 NPR News. 62 degrees with partly sunny skies, a high of 71 today, clouds for tonight, and a low right around 58. And you are running out of time to support 89.7 NPR News and register to win an iPad mini. Our spring membership drive begins later this week, and by making your pledge right now, you will be automatically entered to win an iPad mini. No pledge is necessary, and entries are only accepted at WOSU.org. But hurry, get your entry in before the start of the drive. And support comes from the Wexner Center for the Arts, partnering with the STAR program of the Wexner Medical Center to present an unforgettable evening with Natalie Cole, April 25th in the Mershon Auditorium. This fundraiser features the Grammy Award winner's take on the American Songbook. Tickets and VIP packages at wexarts.org. And support comes from Home Care Assistance, in-home care for older adults with a philosophy of promoting health, well-being, and quality of life for all clients, no matter their limitations. Information on Home Care Assistance is at 481-8888. That's 481-8888. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. This hour, we've been talking about stepfamilies with author Robin Davis. Her new memoir is called Recipe for Joy, a stepmom's story of finding faith, following love, and feeding a family. And also with us is Lisa Davis, a professional clinical counselor with Directions Counseling Group here in Columbus. They are not related, by the way. We have an email from Courtney, or I'm sorry, a message from Courtney on Facebook. She says, now that I'm adult, I can see my experience as a stepchild much more clearly than I did at the time. That being said, I am still absolutely appalled at my first stepmother's behavior and character. It was clear from the second she came into my house that she wanted absolutely nothing to do with me and would have preferred that I live with my mother. Unfortunately, being 10 at the time, everyone just assumed that it was the normal, you're not my real mom style of hatred that every child initially feels toward a step-parent. If they'd only have listened, they'd have realized I was actually in an abusive situation and something might have been done before my father found her cheating on him. I liked my second stepmom right away. I wish my dad had valued my insight more with his second marriage. Perhaps he wouldn't have been so heartbroken in the long run. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of stuff going on there.
Yeah, it is for sure. And it is kind of hard, I think, sometimes when a child is saying, oh, you know, I don't like my stepmom or I don't feel like she loves me. Isn't that kind of what everyone says? And maybe listening to them can help situations. And I think it's very, very difficult. I was very fortunate, but I would love to sit down with my kids in the next couple years and say, really, what was it like?
What did you think of me?
What did you think? Yeah. And because I know what they've said, which was, you know, they were happy when Ken said that we were going to get married. They were happy. They said that they were very happy about that. And one of the girls had the question of, so when I have kids, will she be their step-grandma? And Ken said, yeah, but they can probably just call her grandma. And she's like, oh, okay. You know, that was kind of it. That was the extent. But I was very lucky, I think, that way.
How much do you talk to kids, Lisa, about what is coming?
You mean if
when
you're
it comes
a couple
to the blended, yeah.
Getting married?
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, as much as you can. How do you feel about this? What do you think about this? And, you know, a lot of times children are then moved from one house to somebody else's, and or they have to spend, you know, week with mom, week with dad, and then they've got the new step-parent coming in. And my stepson, he's going to be 33, and when he was, like, 5, he said to me, because he liked me, gosh, I hope you and Daddy never divorce, because then I'd have to go from Mommy's house to Daddy's house to your house. Oh. I went, oh, sweetie, hopefully that will never happen, you know. But for other families, yeah, talking to children a lot. And because of the work that I do, I see a lot of children who are caught in the middle between, you know, parents or step-parents. And a lot of times parents maybe are hesitant to do something. They're a little, you know, afraid. And so I'll say to them, okay, to the child, so if you had a mark on the outside of your body that represented, you know, what hurts on the inside, you know, how much of you would have a mark? And, you know, if they're old enough to grasp that concept, and some will go, oh, yeah, my whole body'd be covered. And the parents go, and that's when I say, okay, yeah, so maybe there's no physical abuse going on, maybe no sexual abuse. But there's something going on, and you know, children having tummy aches so bad they don't want to go to school because not just a step parent, we get the bad rap,
yeah.
But you know, parents also not wanting kids or wanting to spend time with their new spouse to be and not with the children. So listening to children as to what's going on is so important. And if you're the involved parent, asking them, how are you feeling? What are you thinking? Keep those lines of conversation open.
Robin Davis, at 3 years when you had the crisis, mm-hmm. You started getting counseling. Mm-hmm. How did you start to change things?
That I started to tell the kids that I wasn't perfect. I mean, literally, I sat down at dinner and said, you know, you've noticed I'm crying all the time, which they did. Shocking. And I said, I don't have all the answers. And they seemed relieved, really, you know, because I think that created a certain amount of honesty. There becomes that barrier with kids and adults where they think, parents think they know everything. Adults think they know everything. Well, we don't. And so I would say, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. Let's talk about that. And that was one way that I was able to just be really honest with them and say, I don't have all the answers. Ask me a question. Let's talk about it. Let's figure it out. And that was the starting point for us.
614-292-8513 is the number to call if you want to join the conversation. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. Terry in Youngstown, you're on the air. Welcome, Terry.
Thank you, Ann. My question or comment is there a book that aunts and uncles could read? Because, you know, we're also involved, too. I mean, sometimes when I'm at family gatherings, I have to bite my tongue and I go home bleeding, you know, because, you know, names are mentioned and you don't want to make the father or the mother look bad in front of the kids. And, you know, it's like, do you have a book that you can read? I know the old adage is always say something nice about the parent, even though sometimes it's very hard when you're in front of the kids. You know, is there any book that you can recommend?
Lisa Davis, the professional?
Okay. Yeah, well, I'm not sure. A book about communicating with your family member or with the ex or with the children?
Everyone, you know. It's a tightrope, you know?
Uh-huh. Because there's anger or tension? Or I think I would need to know a little more before I could recommend a specific book.
A little bit of tension, you know, when it comes to drugs, you know, because the drugs was the big reason why there was a breakup of the family unit. Uh-huh. And they adore their father. And it's like, only if you knew, you know? You know, so, you know, I just bite my tongue a lot, you know, because the father said some really outrageous things what he did in the past. You know, he was an astronaut, he was a business, you know.
Oh. Uh-huh.
And it's the drugs that are talking to him, you know, and the kids adore him. And it's like, what can one do in this situation?
Go ahead.
I can't say there's a book I would recommend, as opposed to you having a relationship, a really good relationship with the children involved, and asking them, you know, what do you think about that? Dad saying he's an astronaut, and, you know, just staying involved with them. We tend to come to things from our perspective. But, you know, seeking first to understand and then to be understood is very important. So understanding how is all this talk from dad impacting the children? I would want you to communicate with them first and see where they're coming from and then go from there.
Yeah, the relationship with the kids. Robin, how big of a deal was it for you to have a separate relationship with the kids versus one always in terms of your husband, Ken? Does that make sense?
It does, and it was very important. And it still is something that's very important. You know, the kids are all at college now, and Ken and I talk to them kind of about different things and text them about different things, and they'll communicate with me about different things than they will about him. And I think that that's very important. For the beginning, I definitely kind of hid behind Ken and let that relationship be the first one. But I needed to have my own relationship with them so that it was a matter of trust and that it wasn't, oh, yeah, she just lives here. I didn't want it to be like that. I wanted to be able to have my own relationship and bond with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And something I recommend for step parents coming into it is go have fun with the kids. We tend as step parents to be the, you know, oh, don't touch that or put that away. You know, we find all the negative things instead of just going and having fun and meeting the kid, doing what they want to do. And I hear step parents sometimes going, well, I don't really have an interest in soccer. Well, really get one. If that's what the kid is interested in, go meet the child on their level. Don't expect them to come to hockey with you if they don't like hockey. Not yet. Establish a friendship with them. It doesn't have to be this parenting kind of relationship. They have a parent. Let their parent parent. And you go have fun and establish a healthy relationship with the child, especially before you start disciplining and punishing and interceding in those ways.
Robin, you told some interesting stories about how you started to assert yourself as a voice of wisdom in the family. And at first you just sort of held back and he knew it all. And that's, you know, and Ken, that's all they needed. But you started to notice that, well, maybe they do need that second opinion.
Well, and that it wasn't the same opinion as my husband's. One of my stepdaughters was interested in dance. She loves to dance. And Ken had just come out when she was in junior high and really in middle school and then into high school. You know, that's fine. You can dance, but that's not a career. And you'll go to college and study science and blah, blah, blah. And he didn't do it in a harsh way. It was just that was his perspective. And then I found myself talking to people as I do in my career and talking to them about a career in writing, which is not science based. And that it's kind of, you know, it was a long path that I took, and I realized that what he was saying and I was supporting was not the same thing that I was saying to other people. And so I would start to bring that in and say, you know, okay, Sarah, do you love to dance? And she said, yes, more than anything in the world. And it's like, okay, we need to shift our focus and concentrate on what you love to do. And we were able to do that. And it was the same thing with calculus, which is kind of a big joke. I've never taken calculus. There's my big
either.
Admission. In
Me too. It's out there.
But to my husband, he was like, what do you mean you've never taken calculus? Everybody has to take calculus.
Surprised at his response. Really?
I've done fine, I think, without calculus. And then it really became okay to say, yeah, you know, I understand Dad's point of view, but it's not mine, and no, there's a different way. Now, none of them wanted to study Shakespeare either, you know, which I get, but they all picked calculus over Shakespeare. And that's all right.
And Ken was always okay with that.
Absolutely. In fact, he wanted that other side. Like most people, he could only see things from his point of view. And so then when I would say, well, what about, he might be flustered for a second, but then he'd be like, oh, yeah, of course. Of course. And of course, with Sarah and dance, I pointed out to him that if I hadn't taken risks, I would never have met him. I would never have met the children. And so we needed to be able to support the risks, you know, within a certain amount of with some stability behind it.
That's got to be a tough thing, that the at first, to disagree with your spouse over something to do with the kids.
It is.
It doesn't have to be angry. Just even if it's with a calm, cool, collected person like Ken, it can still be a little.
Yeah. And being respectful again. And my stepkids now, they're older. And my stepson's married and has two children. They're fabulous. And we're very close. But sometimes it's really fun because my stepson will call me and, hey, Lisa, what do you think of this? And I need your opinion on this. And I just feel like, oh, yay, he likes me a little bit, you know, and it's good. But yeah, it can be difficult when you disagree. So you have to just, again, all things with grace, be respectful.
It's interesting because how long have you been married?
26 years.
Yeah, and you're still celebrating those breakthroughs that you feel with the kids.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It, you know, it just evolves. My stepson and I, oh, my goodness, when he was a teenager, he and I would go to counseling sessions together, and he described us as being two magnets who repelled one another. Oh. It was that bad. And he wasn't the one who was oppositional defiant. And that's just because we had issues. I'm telling you, I had to do a lot of growing up. And then as he became an adult and, you know, got married and had children, and I became an adult and grew up and some of my perspectives changed, we now have a wonderful relationship. None of the kids call each other step, or the kids don't call me step grandma, and I don't call them my step grandkids. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful, wonderful relationship that has been bathed in a lot of prayer. And I thanked my stepson for forgiving me for the huge mistakes I made when he was younger and his sister.
Robin, you don't mince words. It's a stepmom story, mm-hmm. of finding faith, following love, and feeding a family. How do you feel about the semantics of the whole thing?
Well, for me, it was never an issue. Had they wanted to call me mom, that would have been okay with me. I'm thinking about that, and I might have been a little uncomfortable. But they always wanted to call me Robin. They still call me Robin. When they introduce me, they'll introduce me as Robin, my stepmom, or just Robin, you know, and that's all good. The semantics of it really didn't concern me a great deal. We all know that they have a mother, and we know that she is still part of their life from a different realm. So it wasn't important to me to be called mom. And in fact, I think that could have been detrimental to us and to our relationship. I suppose that's it on that.
You organized the book. Mm-hmm. It's the title is Recipe for Joy. And, you know, lucky for all of us who like recipes, there are recipes in the book. Mm-hmm. But you set it up appetizer, I think it is, the soup, mm-hmm. the salad, the bread. What was your thinking there?
Well, I wanted it to be like a celebratory meal because I think that life really unfolds that way. I think it starts with a toast and then moves on from there. And I could organize the stories instead of it just being a timeline, that I could organize the stories by the themes behind each of them. And I also wanted to really enforce that there was a celebration. There was so much joy in there. If you read the first chapter, the prologue, it's very, very heavy. It's very sad, and there are other very sad moments. But I wanted there to be a prelude to the fact that there is so much more joy in that, and certainly a happy ending.
Beautiful. Yeah, there is. It is a salad. It's a mix, and it doesn't always get worked out the way you think it would. You know, the child who was the oppositional defiant child, we don't really have a relationship with these days. We haven't seen her in a few years.
Uh-huh.
But we don't have any bitterness towards her. I don't know what her feelings are towards us, but we had to practice tough love when she was 18 and move her out. You know, we said, mm-hmm. you can live here if you're not doing drugs and you're going to work or you're going to school. She chose not to do that. She's doing her own thing now, and I wish her well. But, you know, things just don't always work out. It is that salad, and sometimes mm-hmm. you just got to pray for them and hope for the best for them, but it's not always a neat, clean package at the end. Some things are wonderfully surprising and beautiful, like our steps, my relationship mm-hmm. with his stepson and his wife, and other times there's some distance, but it's okay.
It's not perfect. Nothing's perfect, right, Robin?
That's absolutely true.
Robin Davis, thanks for joining us today. Really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you.
Robin Davis, author of Recipe for Joy, A Stepmom Story of Finding Faith, Following Love, and Feeding a Family. And also Lisa Davis, no relation, is a professional clinical counselor with Directions Counseling Group. Lisa, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
And thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher. This is listener-supported WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus, and streaming on the web at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station, a service of WOSU Public Media.